This episode of Warp 5 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, I'm Anthony Montgomery, Ensign Travis Mayweather on Star Trek Enterprise, and you're listening to Trek FM.
How we doing, Trip?
Ready when you are.
Prepare for warp.
Course laid in, sir. Request permission to get underway.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Enterprise show. I'm Christopher Jones, and joining me, as she does every single week from down in Australia, it's Kate Walsh. And, you know, Kate, it's late afternoon here in Japan, a little bit behind you in time, and it's that time of day where I'm always a bit peckish, and that slice of pecan pie you've got right there looks awfully good.
Yeah, it is looking pretty good, nice and sticky, and it goes perfectly with my dinner, which is a pan-fried catfish this evening.
Wow, so something's going on here. You've got pecan pie, you've got pan-fried catfish. I guess the next thing you're going to tell me is you've got some Georgia peaches on hand. What's the occasion, Kate?
Well, I've also got a mint julep to back it up. But
So what's the occasion? What is it with all this southern food you've got there?
Well, I believe the occasion is that tonight we're celebrating Trip Tucker III, and what better way to do it?
With all his favorite foods, of course.
That's right.
You know, as we talk about the various elements of Enterprise, we've been talking about the main characters from time to time. We haven't talked about Trip yet. We talked about Hoshi a couple of weeks ago. And of course, we've examined Archer and T'Pol in depth. And speaking of those last two there, today we're going to put that final piece of Enterprise's triumvirate into place with Trip Tucker. Kate, before we go any further, though, I've just got to tell you one thing. Keep your shirt on, Lieutenant.
I'll do my best.
Good. We're going to keep a family-friendly podcast going here. So, all right. Anyway, Trip is one of my favorite characters on Enterprise, possibly number one on my list, and I'm glad we're finally making our way down to engineering today. But, Kate, tell me what you think about Trip Tucker.
I think Trip's probably my favorite character in the whole series. There's an innocence about him that makes for some really good storylines, especially in that first season. So, yeah, he's definitely a standout. I think it is those top three characters, Archer, Trip and T'Pol, that are fleshed out the most in the series. So, you know, it's natural that we're going to be drawn towards them more. But it's not just Trip, it's Connor Trinneer, and he does such a wonderful portrayal of Trip.
Right.
And you really get a sense of him in the character and authenticity.
That's the thing, too. It's not just that he's one of the most fleshed out characters, because, you know, you have characters on shows that are main characters who are very fleshed out, but you don't necessarily connect with those characters, and they're not necessarily your favorite characters. But one reason Trip is one of my favorite characters, if not my favorite character on the show, is, I think, very much like you said, because of Connor himself. And it's because Trip is, he's us. He's like the good old everyday guy on the ship who you can associate with. He's okay with being out there on the voyage, but he's not necessarily gung-ho to be in space, and everything's new to him as it would be for us, and he's just very relaxed about it.
Well, he's not, certainly, as you say, he's not gung-ho about being out there in space. He's quite natural about it, but at the same time, he's got such an enthusiasm when these opportunities are presented to him. You know, exactly right. What you would expect of someone that is quite humble and, you know, and modest and down to earth, but then is seeing these wonderful opportunities to go on board new spaceships and to meet new species, and the way in which he does that is with, you know, such a childlike innocence that you can't help but like him.
Right. Well, you know, the description of the character leading into the series described him as thrill-seeking. Mm. And that's sort of what you're saying there. It said that Trip Tucker is a Southerner who isn't above using his country charm to disarm people. Not one to shy away from adventure, Tucker's life before boarding the Enterprise is thrill-seeking. His past experiences range from working on an ocean reclamation project in the Florida Keys to a budding career in orbital engineering, building starships at Utopia Planitia. His skills exhibited in a hostile environment have earned Tucker the reputation as a top-notch troubleshooter who takes challenges that most engineers might think impossible. So that's the description of Trip Tucker that was put there to set up the character going into the series.
How do you see that comparing with the character we ended up with?
I think it's fairly accurate. You know, Connor himself talking about Trip before the show started in a piece that Kevin Dillmore wrote, Connor said that he's a smartass, but he's really into the voyage. He's excited about what they're doing and that no one has ever done it before. His humor can be a little unnerving with the aliens because they don't know what to do with him. And I guess by that he means the aliens. I think he means T'Pol and Phlox on the ship, as opposed to random aliens that they meet, you know, as they're going. Connor said he's a go-getter and he calls a spade a spade. Trip is a space cowboy in a sense. If he was around now, he'd be working in the pit crew for a NASCAR driver. He's a little gritty and all that. And I think obviously that's how Connor saw the character and how he played it. But I think that matches quite well with the description of the character as it was set up for the series. And as it played out, I think it's pretty accurate to him. Of course, he mellows, you know, he becomes more comfortable and he mellows along the way, especially thanks to his relationship with T'Pol, which we'll talk about a bit as well. But the Southern charm to disarm people is there. I always see, even though he's the engineer on the ship, I always associate Trip more with Dr. McCoy than I do with Scotty.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I can see that too. But isn't that a part of that? That's that triumvirate thing again, you know, the three-parter, and then he really represents right. Dr. McCoy in that sense.
But not just that part, not that aspect so much that he was used more than other characters because he was part of the triumvirate, but just the personality, the Southern charm, his way of speaking, not just the accent, but just
his frankness.
I feel kind of the way he sees the world. Well, I can see like Bones is kind of maybe an older Trip. You know, the younger Trip is more the thrill-seeking. Bones is wiser. But they just really strike me as having so many similarities.
The only thing that stood out to me in that description of Trip that doesn't quite sit right, and it might just be my interpretation of the word, and that's thrill-seeking. To me, I associate that word with recklessness, and I don't see that with Trip. He certainly is looking for experiences,
yeah,
and to live life to its fullest, but I don't know, maybe it's just the word.
Well, I think it's how you interpret the word. You could interpret it, as you said, as being reckless, or you could interpret it as someone really looking to experience new things, and I think that in that respect, it fits his character.
Yeah.
That he really wants. But I mean, think about going over to the Zerillian ship. I mean, that was, I would be nervous myself if I were in that situation. My first time out really in deep space, I'm going to go to this alien ship. I know I'm going to have to go through some kind of bizarre acclimation process in order to get onto the ship in the first place. I don't know. It seems pretty thrilling to me. And that's without even knowing that I got to stick my hands in a box of pebbles after I got there.
And would end up with a couple of extra nipples as a result.
That's right. I get the wrist nipple.
I mean, it's easy to laugh at that episode. It is a funny episode, but there are some great trip moments in it. And the fear that he experiences as he's going through that process of acclimatization and yeah. feeling really ill and scared. I just think Connor handles that so well. There's a lot to like in that episode. And then as he struggles to deal with people's reactions to what's happened to him and the making fun of him, but also the questioning of his integrity. So there is a lot of good things in that episode.
Most definitely. And as Brandon mentioned when he was on the show, his favorite show is the Andy Griffith Show. And I feel there's a lot of that influence in Tripp in the creation of the character and the way the character is written.
Well, absolutely. There's, as I said, there's that real innocence, that country charm, that family values that you can see in Tripp that I can see. You know, I can see why Branham would have compared Tripp to Andy Griffith. But the other thing that Branham mentioned in that interview is that perhaps of all of the Enterprise characters, he said that he thought that Tripp was probably the most science fiction-y. And by that, he actually meant that he was the closest to the data or the EMH, the character exploring humanity, and because of that innocence. So I thought that was a really interesting take on Tripp as well, that striving to be human. Even though he was already human, we got to see his humanity explored as the show moves through those first couple of seasons.
Yeah, I don't know if I see that, or I see the innocence part. That part I get, and with Data,
I think maybe it's in the childlikeness of those characters.
In that respect, there is a similarity to Data there, in terms of being the science fiction-y character and seeking to be human. I don't really see that.
But I do think that he is a character through which Enterprise explores humanity at that point in time.
Well, he's a point of view character for us.
Yeah, right?
Just like Hoshi is as well, because of the way they're experiencing these things for the first time. So yeah, I can see that. Another thing Brandon said, and this wasn't in the interview that he did here on Warp 5, but this is going all the way back to an interview he did with Larry for Communicator, the magazine, prior to the launch of the show. And he described Tripp. He said, Tripp, our engineer, is a brilliant engineer, but he's no different than a really brilliant, young, eager physicist today in that he doesn't know how to act amid alien civilizations. Mm. He's not a diplomat. And that quote from Brandon there kind of ties in for me with what you're describing here, that he's more like us. He's eager to get out there, but he doesn't know how to act. And we see that definitely, especially in Broken Bow, when they're down on Rigel 10 and the alien mother is trying to wean her child so that her child can learn to breathe the regular atmosphere. And Tripp's reaction to that is very much, which is a human reaction, though, which maybe is why I don't see the trying to become human part. It's a very human reaction, but it's also a human reaction of not knowing how to deal with things around you that you're not familiar with.
Well, I think I'd make two points about that. That particular reaction, yes, it's a natural human reaction, but it also is perhaps an immature reaction, given that
it is.
You know, we've started to become used to getting out into space, and you would expect that he's you know, going to expect to meet other cultures and to see different things, and you know, so even today on Earth, we interact with people with different cultural backgrounds, and we might balk a little bit at some of the things that they do, but ultimately we understand that cultures have different values, and at least ultimately needs to be an effort to understand that those values are different, even if we don't agree with them.
And we see our crew learn that as the show goes on. And there's also a difference between reacting to those things from the comfort of your own environment, because you know, one thing I see here again, I live in Japan and I've lived here for most of my adult life. And what I see here when people move here is that, you know, it takes some time. It takes a lot. Mm-hmm. Some people never get it. And then some people, it takes them several years or more before they're able to view the things that people do from the perspective of a native, instead of expecting that you're in another culture and you don't agree with the way they do things and you think they should adapt to you, even though you are in their culture. And that's a little bit with Tripp's reaction there. You know, if that had happened on Earth, we could read the reaction one way.
A little bit like a knight in sick bay, an archer expecting others to completely accommodate Porthos's peeing habits.
Oh, sure. Just put a mat down. It'll be okay.
Yeah. But the other point I was going to make about Tripp, and it wasn't so much that I think Brandon or I are saying that it was about Tripp representing trying to become a human character, rather that the role that those characters play in Star Trek are to represent humanity for us. And right. to allow us to reflect back on the human experience. And I do think that Tripp has that role within Enterprise, because we get, and it's the same with Hoshi in different respects, but the two of those characters together both have this innocence, and they're both characters that are very competent and engrossed in their careers. They're great technicians. They're not diplomats. They're not, you know, they're not really career Starfleet people, even though Tripp has had a career in Starfleet. He's an engineer, you know, and that's what he does and that's what he loves. And so all this other stuff's really new to him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I agree on all that. What did you think about, of course, now you live in Australia, so you're not in the US, you're not really attuned to the different regional accents in the US and how they differ, I would imagine, since you're not hearing all of the different ones all the time. What did you think about Tripp's accent? I'm sure you've heard fans talk about his Southern accent, and what was your impression of that?
Well, as to start with, we have an awareness of certain regions in America, you know, probably LA, you know, New York, your New Jersey kind of accents as well, your Southern accents, although we certainly don't understand the variations amongst them.
That's what I mean, yeah.
What's interesting, though, is I seem to remember hearing at one point that, I mean, isn't Tripp from Florida, or was he meant to have been?
Well,
it's
interesting.
Almost more like a Texan accent? I'm not sure. I remember hearing there was confusion about where he was from versus the accent he was portraying.
It's interesting that you say that, because now ultimately Tripp is from Panama City, Florida, which is right below Alabama and in the panhandle of Florida there. But initially in the writing, it wasn't really specified where he was from. He was just a Southern gentleman. You know, there was the bit about the fact that he had worked on an ocean reclamation project in the Florida Keys, but that didn't mean he was from there. It could have just been where he was working. So he was just Southern. And so I've always been impressed, because I am a Southerner, although I don't so much sound like one these days because I've been away for a long time and accents shift because of your surroundings. But you can hear a lot of really bad Southern accents on television, that, you know, people try to do Southern accents and you as a Southerner, you hear it and you say, that's not...
And I have to say, one of the worst Southern accents I've ever heard is from Colin from Trek News and Views. It's absolutely appalling. And I'm going to say that again and again. It's appalling, Colin. Stop it now.
You've told me that before. You've told me that before. So, but with Tripp, I think he does the accent pretty well. But it turns out that Connor is from Washington State, which is about as far away from Southern as you can get. But there's a twist to it, which is that Connor's mother and her family are from Southern Missouri and Arkansas. And Arkansas in particular, you know, that's getting down there where it really is a Southern accent. And so he grew up hearing that Southern drawl around him all the time. So it's not exactly like an actor having no experience with the accent and having to figure out, like, how to imitate it. He had heard that himself all the time growing up. And so he says that he, this again was in an interview before the show started, he said that he was going to try to do a middle of the road Oklahoma and not go too deep south with it. Now, I have to ask Larry if his middle of the road Oklahoma accent is authentic or not, because Larry Nemechek is from Oklahoma, but that's what Connor was going for. And then he said, when it was finally determined that Tripp was from Florida, I said, well, come on, guys, I'm not doing Florida. So you're right. That's basically what you're hearing there. But he pulls off the accent pretty well. It's believable for sure.
Yeah, I occasionally hear Australian actors on TV who can do a relatively convincing Australian accent, except for a couple of words, and you just hear, you know, the vowels pronounced just a little broader than they should be.
But I love the accent because it's part of what helps me connect with him, again, not because of any Southern connection, but just because he feels so authentic. And it just feels like someone you can sit down with, you have a drink with, you could chat. He feels like a real person. And it helps me really connect with the character and therefore everything that they do with the character in the writing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice touch. It really does add to the depth of that character. It might have been a bit disturbing if we'd had a Vulcan with a Southern accent, though.
Now, that would have been quite funny. Yes, it would. All right, well, why don't we move on to another topic, Kate, and talk about something that we touched on just briefly earlier, and that's the shipboard romance between Tripp and T'Pol.
Yeah, and we have spoken about this a little bit before, but, you know, as I was preparing for this show and looking over the various episodes where we see interactions between Tripp and T'Pol, what I found really interesting is it's not until, and we did say a little bit of this last week, it's not until T'Pol gets exposed to Trillium D that we really see the romantic side of that relationship develop. Up until that point, what we see is perhaps at first quite a bit of tension, you know, Tripp's prejudice towards Vulcans as much as Archer had, and then maybe a little bit of a friendship develop out of necessity in terms of Tripp being there for T'Pol in dealing with what was going on with her fiance. But, you know, even in Shuttlepod 1, it's Reed that first mentions T'Pol as someone that might be sexy, who has a cute butt. You know,
that's
Tripp
right.
had never even considered it. He was quite surprised. Yeah. He's thinking, yeah, but she's Vulcan.
That's right. Reed, on the other hand, that was on his mind all the time.
Exactly. Good old Stinky. But, you know, even for two seasons, we really don't see much of a relationship there between the two of them.
Yeah, you know, this is something that we talked about this week on the Ready Room, actually. Matthew and I were on there. We had Larry on with us, and we did the catwalk. And the conversation, what it started with us talking about Archer and T'Pol and the bit in the catwalk where they're up there. And as Matthew put it really well, they're kind of like the odd couple up there, trying to get some rest, and they're disturbing each other. But then Larry asked us what we thought about whether there was any potential for that relationship between T'Pol and Archer. And then that led us to T'Pol and Tripp. And what we discussed was what you're saying with the Trillium D and, well, the Pinar syndrome and then the Trillium D, kind of these two things together, I feel led her to play more loosely with her emotions. So what Larry said was, if the writers were going to chalk it up to drug addiction, like, okay, T'Pol wouldn't normally do these things or get in this relationship with Tripp or anything else if it weren't for the drug addiction. That's one way to read it. But I feel like maybe those feelings were there. Now, with Tripp, maybe not so much. But with T'Pol, maybe it had been developing before we saw it. And the Trillium D addiction especially helped her to loosen up a lot and to be willing to explore that. And that's how I see it from T'Pol's side. Now, from Tripp's side, maybe experiences growing over the course of all these missions that I had gone on, becoming more comfortable with aliens and such. But he still seemed really hesitant or nervous about it at first. What do you think really opened Tripp up to the relationship?
Well, just to touch briefly on T'Pol's side, the thing that tells me that there was something in it for T'Pol before the Pinar syndrome and the Trillium D was the episode Breaking the Ice. Now, this is where, as I said, she was dealing with the letter that she'd received about her pending marriage. And right. Tripp had read it because they thought that it was some covert message from the Vulcans. And he told T'Pol that he'd read that letter. And so he helped her with that particular problem and was the only one she could talk to because she didn't want to share it with anyone else. And mm-hmm. he made her see that she had choices. There was the moment where he shared with her that how much he loves pecan pie. And at the end of the episode, we see her having a piece of pie. And I felt that that closing scene planted the seed for her letting him into her life, her taking on board things that he had to say and giving him a chance, letting a friendship in that she might not have considered before. And I think it's quite natural that friendship could lead to more feelings if she was open to it, which she became as a result of Pinar's and Trillium D. As far as Tripp goes, it's a difficult one, but we do have the episode Similitude where Sim expresses feelings for T'Pol and he doesn't know whether they're his feelings or Tripp's. And that hints at, probably for the first time, I think, that maybe Tripp did have feelings that he just hadn't expressed that hadn't come out in other plot lines. Mm-hmm. Got us thinking about, you know, what's he thinking? And of course, it goes on to develop from there when they get into the Vulcan neuropressure. You know, it's hard to say. It's a friendship that develops over time. Feelings can develop. And it was certainly hinted at that Tripp had been developing those feelings through that Sim stuff. But I'm not entirely sure where it would have come from. It wasn't as obvious as to how Tripp developed those. It was just kind of thrown in with that episode.
Right. It's a clearer path for me to see how T'Pol gets there than it is to see how Tripp gets there. But as you said, it's a working relationship turned friendship that develops over time. They become closer together. Mm. Sometimes those things turn into romantic relationships, as they did with Tripp and T'Pol. So,
so
they get there.
Stands out to me, and you've already hinted at it, is that in that first season in particular, it's like the writers were getting something with Archer and T'Pol. There were quite a few encounters that hinted
there
at that.
Early on.
And I know that, you know, they kind of played with it again in A Night in Sick Bay, and it was dismissed at that point as, you know, well, good thing we're not attracted to each other, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But it still kind of came in and out. And it seemed like a more obvious path at that point than Tripp and T'Pol.
More obvious, maybe, but
in terms
I don't
of the
know.
Writing,
I don't think
not in terms of necessarily a great storyline.
Well, actually, I think it would have been a very interesting storyline, as again we discussed on the Ready Room. But I'm not sure it was ever really there as much as it's the fans reading it as being there, kind of feel that way. So, but I do encourage everyone who's listening to this, Enterprise fans, the current episode of The Ready Room, which is episode 119, which is about the catwalk. Go listen to that because we talk a lot about T'Pol and Archer in there before we get to the Tripp stuff. So you can you see where that was going. But it turned out to be, with T'Pol and Tripp, turned out to be a really nice relationship. And I think it achieved some of what the T'Pol Archer storyline would have achieved, which is that you took a Vulcan who could never imagine being with a human, and you took a human who could never imagine being with a Vulcan, and you brought them together, and then they ultimately end up with a child, you know, the first run of a Vulcan-human hybrid, which of course was not successful in this case, but it planted a lot of seeds that lead towards Amanda and Sarek and Spock down the road.
Yeah, I think it developed quite nicely, and I really like the way that it was handled at the start of the fourth season as well.
Right.
Home's a great episode.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching Home recently and thinking, you know, this hadn't explicitly been made out to be a relationship. It was one of those non-relationship relationships where they really need to have that talk about, you know, where are we going? And they just hadn't had it yet. And it was implied. And but nevertheless, it seemed quite strong at that point, which was unusual. But I think that's what any relationship with a Vulcan is going to be like.
Well, let's move from romance to bromance and talk a little bit about Tripp and Archer, who, you know, for me, it's not exactly like when I think of bromance, I think of Miles and Jules on DS9, because that really is like a bromance. Maybe
Harry
Data and
Geordi
a little bit. Harry and Tom, yeah, a little bit. Archer
even,
and Tripp,
Jules and Garrick.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I agree there as defining that as a bromance. That was a very interesting relationship that they had. But, you know, this sort of, I think Bashir was very intrigued by Garrick, and Garrick enjoyed pulling Bashir's strings, I think, more than anything.
Yeah.
But I don't see Bashir and Garrick throwing darts together or reenacting the Alamo together or those types of things. Or I don't see
Bashir,
you know,
Garrick and Garrick
ever...
they have chemistry though. Bashir
they
and
do,
Miles
yeah.
have, you know, long-term relationship material, whereas with Garrick, it's more like a fling.
Right, right. Well, I you know, Bashir was so into the spy stories and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, Garrick was right there incarnate. But as for, you know, Tripp and Archer, there's definitely the friendship bond there.
Yeah.
As well. I think a very, very close friendship bond. But I think that maybe because of the command structure, it isn't exactly a bromance relationship for me, because the captain by nature has to be a little bit more standoffish in his position on the ship. But there's no doubt that I think Archer trusts Tripp implicitly, perhaps more than anyone else in his life. And I think the same is true of Tripp and the way that he trusts Archer.
I think they can both depend on each other, absolutely. I mean, we see Tripp support Archer in First Flight, you know, and put his own career on the line. We see in Strange New World how Archer gets Tripp through the situation where, you know, he's under the effect of hallucinogens and is about to kill T'Pol. And, and Archer says, you know, you've trusted me before when we were in our training in Outback Australia, our survival training. I ask you to trust me now. And it's absolute and perhaps not a bromance, but certainly an extremely close friendship.
Right. Well, they watch water polo together.
And that's going to test any friendship.
But you can tell, like, in those early dinners with Archer and Tripp and T'Pol together, having their dinners, you can really feel the history and the friendship between Archer and Tripp, which had to serve to help T'Pol feel even more like an outsider than she already did.
One of my favorite moments in the friendship with those two is when Tripp gets the nipples. And they're having the discussion with Phlox, and it's taking everything Archer's got in him not to laugh out loud at Tripp saying, I had no plans to be a working mother. And then again at the dinner following that, it's like, yeah, that's beautiful. That's just what you want a best friend to be doing, is laughing at your expense. But it's just such good character stuff.
Well, that's when you take everything into consideration after you've watched the whole series, and you think about their history together in the NX program and how they met and how Tripp helped Archer stealing the NX beta and all that stuff. It's just the history that Archer and Tripp have together and why Archer chose Tripp in the first place. So the richness of that relationship. And then, like you say, he's sitting there watching his friend who's now pregnant with an alien baby say, "I never expected to be a working mother." It would be really, really hard not just laugh, right?
Going back to that, where they first met in the first flight episode, I have actually heard some fan criticism about that. People that have suggested that they felt that the placement of Tripp in that episode was contrived, that there was nothing of anything else in Enterprise to support it, that it was really just kind of planted there and didn't have any real substance. How do you interpret that?
I think it's called writing and creating a history for your character. I don't understand that. I don't know. I've never thought that, and I don't know how you back up that position, because I mean, if someone just tells me completely out of context that seems contrived, I mean, maybe, but is it any more contrived than Spock and Kirk being at the Academy together, or in the Abrams verse that Spock wrote the program for the Kobayashi Maru? Or, I mean, there are a million things in Star Trek that you can point to and say that the placement of this character here in order to create a historical connection between two characters is contrived. I think that you have to give the writers license to create a history for their characters.
And I think in this particular instance, it's quite legitimate. I mean, Archer was going to handpick his staff for the program. So, for his ship. So it would make sense that he's met his senior staff somewhere before so that he would have confidence in choosing those people. Yeah. I mean, Tripp was also one of the best engineers around, so we would expect him to show up in the leading pilot program, or at least to be around the place somewhere at the time.
Well, Tripp, again, this comes from First Flight, I know, but Tripp was a crew member under Captain Jeffries, for whom, again, this is, of course, retconning it in-universe. The Jeffries tubes on the Enterprise are named after this captain in the future. So it makes sense that he would have been around the NX program. And as you say, it makes sense that Archer would be choosing someone he knows and trusts for his crew. So I don't understand how anyone would really have an issue with Tripp being in that position in that episode. It's convenient, sure. But like I said, so many things are convenient if you really want to break them down that way.
I mean, it's not like we saw Archer going off to get lunch in the cafeteria and he runs into Hoshi and says, "What can you recommend?" And she says, "The miso soup." And you know, he loved it so much that he thinks, "I've got to have this girl on my ship."
No. She would say, "Stay away from the miso soup today. It's too salty."
No doubt.
So, but it's a great friendship that they have.
We do get a lot of friendship moments with Tripp and Archer, though. I especially like Desert Crossing in terms of the way that it builds their relationship. You know, once again, it's a survival environment, so there's a lot at stake in the same way that there was in the NX Beta program. And there always are these high-stakes situations for the two of them. It's what continues to build their friendship. So I think that that's actually an episode that is probably underrated in the scheme of Enterprise and particularly season one, but I think it adds a lot. And we get to see Tripp shirtless as well.
I know that's a big plus for a lot of viewers. But yeah, it's one of those episodes where like the episode itself as a whole, maybe not as memorable as others, but if you are watching for specific points, it has a lot to offer there. You know, there are many, many episodes throughout Star Trek that you can watch for specific points, and it makes them very, very valuable episodes.
The other episode that deals with their relationship that is very significant is Similitude. And this is the episode where we get the clone of Trip in order to essentially harvest what they need to save the real Trip. And Archer takes a decision that could be considered quite questionable ethically, and Phlox has some difficulty with that, even though he recommended that option to Archer. But Archer is willing to do anything to save Trip. And in the context of that season and the things that also happen in the episode Damage, where he steals the warp coils, it adds a lot of depth to Archer's character and the struggles that he faces with ethical decisions at that time. But it shows us the depth of that friendship as well.
And that makes me think about in Cogenitor, at the end of Cogenitor. And it's another reason why I see it a little bit less as a bromance. And there are times where I see the relationship between Archer and Trip almost as a father-son relationship, even though the age difference is not such to support that type of relationship. But maybe it's more like a mentor in a way. I don't know. Yeah. It's a friendship.
An older brother thing.
Yeah, an older brother thing. Yeah, that's probably a good example because of Trip. I know he looks up to Archer as well. And you can see it at the end of Cogenitor where he really gets taken to task by Archer for what he did that resulted in the suicide of the Cogenitor. And you can tell the disappointment that Archer has in Trip. And at the same time, you can tell that Trip really feels that he let Archer down. And it's that feeling that you have, like when you let a friend down as someone that you look up to, and it affects you.
So it's not that it's a bromance. It's just that they're bros.
They're just bros, I guess. But it is a great friendship and a great relationship as well. I feel, you know, Archer and T'Pol, I feel, are the main two characters with whom Trip has these close relationships on the ship. Are there any moments that stand out for you with other characters? Besides Shuttle Pod 1 with Reed, because that's a very, very obvious one. But beyond that,
I do enjoy the relationship with Reed in general. And, you know, just, I mean, off the top of my head, there aren't, I mean, we do see that relationship with Reed develop again in Dead Stop when they get into mischief and do things that they shouldn't be doing to find out what's going on with the station. Right. They're like naughty schoolboys, you know, getting up to no good and getting drunk and talking about bums and getting into places they shouldn't be in, you know, and they're so different. But that's really demonstrated in Shuttle Pod 1, which is why that's such a great episode. But yet it's fun to see the way that they interact and that Malcolm just starts to loosen up a little bit through his relationship with Trip. So I really enjoy that friendship. I think that it's explored probably in more subtle ways. You know, there aren't too many episodes that look at it really overtly. We get the episode 2 days and two nights where they're off out on the town and the Trip's got his loud shirt to make sure he gets maximum attention.
Yeah, that's what I was saving for my favorite moments. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, probably another relationship I really enjoy watching on the show.
So he has his moments with everyone in the crew, but it's definitely within the triumvirate that most of the stories that really highlight Trip, unless it's solo Trip, like Precious Cargo, which I said I wasn't going to talk about today, but...
But who can resist talking about that episode?
But there are so many moments between Archer and Trip and T'Pol. Well, okay, let's go to favorite Trip moments then, because we were just mentioning those right there. And since it just came up, I'll just go ahead and jump in. One of my favorite Trip moments, one of my fun moments, was Trip with Reed on Risa in 2 days and two nights with the loud shirt on going into the bar to pick up women. They think that they've hit the jackpot, and then they end up getting tied up in their Starfleet blue undies down in the basement.
By some guys.
By some guys, some alien dudes.
It's such a funny episode. I wouldn't say it's a standout from my perspective in terms of, you know, overall quality of the season, but there are some really fun moments. And of course, Hoshi's the only one that has any luck at all in the end.
Wow. Yeah, Hoshi rises her place. She's she fits right in there.
We also, of course, have the moment in the pilot where they're at the bar and they're watching the women with the long tongues eating the butterflies.
Yeah, that's in Broken Bow. Yeah.
Trip has a lot of moments with women, not all of them that successful.
That's right. Another favorite moment of mine, a fun moment, is when in the communicator, when they're working on the Suluban ship, and he accidentally cloaks his forearm because there's so much fun that they get to have with that, especially Phlox giving him the glove to wear until it fully decloaks itself.
Yeah, there's so much they could have done with that. They did a lot with it, and it was certainly a funny moment. Yeah. But I can only imagine when they were fleshing out that element of the teleplay and thinking, what can we do with this? And the ideas that must have been put forward and got rejected. But that's for another episode.
Any other fun moments that you like?
Yeah, I really enjoy Tripp's storyline in Singularity, which is, of course, the episode where they all got a little bit loopy. And, of course, Tripp's absolutely obsessed with the captain's chair.
Yeah, I have that on my list as well.
Such an important duty. and I think it gets into a fight with Reed, over the priority of the captain's chair versus the Reed alert.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I love the obsession with the chair. It's just like he's the engineer, but he becomes the handyman at that point, and he's just really, really obsessed with making the best chair that Starfleet could possibly make.
With cup holder.
With the cup holder, yeah. So, cup holder would have been handy. I think they should have kept that on the chairs, because if you think about in the original series, think about how often the yeoman comes around with a little plate of Dixie cups with the drinks in them to hand out.
Oh, absolutely.
Kirk needs somewhere to put his cup.
I mean, what are you going to do in a battle? You know, you've got to get straight to it. You've got to be focused, and you don't want to be holding a cup and thinking, what the hell am I going to do with this? You want to have somewhere to put it while you focus.
That's right. And you don't want to get cocky like Sulu did in The Undiscovered Country and have like nice china with tea just sitting out on your chair. You never know when a shockwave's going to come through.
Another favorite moment for me is in the episode Kanama, where they have been taken prisoner on the assumption that they were smuggling, and he's sitting next to that other alien, and this guy just won't shut up, and he's getting and more annoyed as the episode goes on.
Yeah. Right.
And this guy that's usually so laid back and patient is just losing it.
He was just like any one of us. We've all been there on a flight somewhere on the airplane where the person next to you won't stop talking to you.
That's it.
You're trying to read a book, you're trying to do something else, and they're just telling you their life story. Yep.
And I'm guessing that another one of your favorite moments is Tripp's interaction with Feasel Phlox.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That was brilliantly written.
Which, of course, we did discuss on the Ready Room in relation to the episode Stigma. I also love the role that Tripp takes on in hosting movie night.
Oh, yeah.
He even hosts, at one point, The Bride of Chaotica.
Oh, did he do The Bride of Chaotica?
He did.
Okay. I knew he was really into Frankenstein. I think Frankenstein is his favorite movie. Yeah. Also, The Bride of Frankenstein and The Son of Frankenstein. I think they should have staged their own. They should have shot their own film on the ship. The Dog of Frankenstein, starring Carthus.
What is it? Franken-canine.
Frank-canine. Yes. Actually, on the catwalk, which, again, we did this week on Ready Room, they were having movie night in the catwalk. And she's like, we're doing movie night up here. He says, yeah, it's captain's orders. It's the day the earth stood still. So even in that confined area up there, they were still going to do movie night. So what about serious moments? So those are our favorite fun moments of Trips. What are a few of your favorite serious moments for him in the series?
I think my absolute favorite serious moment with Trip is in Home, when he's gone out on his date with T'Pol, and she's told him that she's going to get married. Yeah. And you see that that emotion and that devastation as he comes to realize for the first time that he loves her. And at the same moment, he knows he's lost her.
Yeah, that is a wonderful moment. For me, really, not only that moment, but all of his interactions with T'Pol's mother, just, fixing the food replicator, all these things that he does. I love that whole storyline because you can just really feel there that he really cares about T'Pol. Her mother can sense that being a parent, especially seeing how this guy feels about your daughter. And yet Trip is, he knows we're here because of, this is why we're here. T'Pol's going to have to marry. The whole interaction with her mother is really nice for me.
It's a small moment as well for me, but one that I do like, and you'd blink and you'd miss it, but it's in Fight or Flight, and it's their first opportunity to really explore an alien ship, and he so desperately wants to go on that ship, and he's not allowed to because, as Archer said, at this point, Enterprise still needs its chief engineer on board. And just that disappointment, it's such a wonderful expression of, the flip side of his enthusiasm and his hopefulness and, that spirit of exploration.
Right. Yeah. Also, some of my favorite moments have to do with his growth as he gets used to being in space and interacting with other species. And I mentioned earlier Cogenitor and how disappointed Archer was at the end. And I don't agree with Trip's actions in that episode because it was a learning moment for him that his initial reactions are natural in terms of we see someone who we feel is being held back and we feel bad and we want to help them, but we don't think about the consequences of our actions. But just the kindness and concern that Trip had for the Cogenitor in that episode, I really like, because again, it shows Trip learning to look beyond humanity, humans themselves, and start to apply the way that he would approach people on Earth on a broader scale, which is something I think here on Earth people have to do. It's not something you understand when you're a kid. It's not something you understand even when you're a teenager or even when you're in university. It's something that with the right experiences, you learn as you grow older to see everyone equally instead of only the people in your town or your state or your country. Mm. And in Star Trek, we're putting that on a galactic scale dealing with aliens. And as we talked about earlier with Trip being a point of view character for us, in this sense, that was a great moment in the series for him.
We also see some great moments in season 3 as he comes to terms with the death of his sister. And then again later in the episode, The Forgotten, when he's trying to process writing a letter in relation to a lost crew member who was under his command.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yep.
So there were some really good moments as he deals with the more serious issues that come up in that season.
Yeah, that's a really strong moment. That's a really good one. You mentioned the death of his sister. This was one other bit that I had pulled out from some questions that had been asked of Connor back before the show launched. Not before the show launched. This was actually, of course, in season 3 after the Zindi thing had happened. And they asked him, I want to say it was Dan Madsen interview. It could have been something else, but they asked him about how do you play the fun-loving Trip that we've known in the aftermath of your sister being killed by the Zindi? Mm. And what Connor said, I find these things interesting just because of, especially if an actor can play a character who just feels so natural that you don't feel like they're acting. You know, what did they draw upon for this? And he said that I looked at it sort of like my own life. There are some people who have passed away that I cared about a great deal, but I am still a fun-loving person myself who just has moments of darkness. That's how people behave and people react. If you don't keep on going, you sort of get swallowed up by the pain of it all. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, and it's something, you know, I lost about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, I lost my father. And so I've had that feeling as well where I've, you know, I have moments where I really think about it, and then, but I know most of the time I have to go on and I have to move forward. And I think it's a great way of approaching Enterprise itself, which was that, you know, things happen. Everything's new. Things are going to happen to us while we're out there, and we have to just keep going on and keep moving forward.
But I also think, like in life for all of us, when we go through those difficult times, and when Tripp went through that and the loss of his sister, he came out the other side such a stronger and more mature character.
Right, yeah. Yeah, sometimes it takes those tragedies to grow in that way, unfortunately. But that's you know, the course of life. So one more final favorite moment for me, serious one, which is following the same path I'm following here, which is the growth and getting more comfortable. And that's in Oasis, at the end of Oasis, when he kisses Liana and he's made her he's programmed the food replicator with 5 flavors of ice cream. It's only 5, but they're good ones. And she asks him is Rocky Road in there? He's like, you didn't think I'd send you off that Rocky Road now, did you? And they have this little kiss, but again, it's just that concern. And there he's treating this alien in a way that you can tell that he doesn't see her as alien at all. He sees her as just another being, and he's concerned for her well-being and her future through that episode. And so again, it was growth for him, and I really liked that moment. All right, well, do you have any final thoughts on Tripp, Kate, before we wrap up here?
As I've said, Tripp is probably my favorite character in all of Enterprise. I don't think I'm alone in that. I think he was a very popular character in the series, and I think the reason for that for a lot of people is because he's so relatable. And that's largely due to Connor Trinneer's portrayal of him. Brannon has said in the season 1 Blu-rays that he thought that Connor just brought so much more to the character than he ever expected. You know, and that's something that I just like to acknowledge, that you know, it's not just the writing, it's his acting ability and down-to-earth nature of Connor himself.
Oh, definitely. I could not agree more. Well, it's been great really examining Tripp with you today, Kate, and we'll come back and do some more characters periodically on the show. We have a number of main cast members to get to. Are we going to do a dedicated Porthos show, Kate, as a cast member?
I'm thinking we might actually do a two-parter.
A two-parter, okay. The other side of the cheese.
Well, he does have 4 legs instead of 2, so...
Okay, well, then he deserves 2 episodes. I gotcha. So we'll come back to characters in the future, but Tripp isn't the only thing we've been discussing here on Trek FM this week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Gene Roddenberry.
I appreciate Gene Roddenberry as a creator because he had a vision and he stuck to it, unlike other creators of other franchises that we won't get into.
Who are you talking about, Drew?
Not George Lucas.
Earl Grey.
Romance on TNG.
I got the 4 pips. I'm ready to settle down now. It wasn't until then that I could get stay with one woman.
So instead of rings, do they use that last pip on his collar as the signal of their eternal love and devotion together?
The orb.
Bajoran prophecies.
Well, you know, I was thinking that Horan was probably not so much a prophet as a Bajoran songwriter who just wrote really bad lyrics.
The Ready Room.
Faces.
What you brought up, is the exact reason why I like this episode so much, because the essential message is we have to have our good and our not so hot qualities to make us who we are. We have to deal with them. And this is just a very extreme version of that.
To the journey!
Workforce rewrite.
And I'm totally with you about Jaffin. He is like Mark version 2.0. He's just like, he's a little too laid back. He's a little too quick to buy into all of this. Mm-hmm. And I just, yeah, dude, grow a pair. I like the way you put that.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Black and Cushman, part two.
So they were trying to find a replacement, not to play Spock, but to play another Vulcan who would be assigned to the Enterprise.
Whoa.
And one of the guys they were considering was David Carradine, who went on
what?
To play.
Oh my God.
Warp 5.
Continuity and consequences.
It was a place that you generally don't expect Star Trek to go with a major character for sure, and certainly not for the period of time that it went on, because, you know, it starts in Fusion. She becomes infected with this Pedar syndrome, and then that even leads her to drug addiction.
Trek News and Views.
Looking back at TNB.
Oh, okay, we're still talking TMP. I was thinking Janeway's pink nighty.
I know, I was like, what?
Oh, Janeway's pink nighty, OBQ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you seem to like it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and before, yeah. Yeah. That was a nice nighty.
Literary Treks.
You'll win.
It has two sides to it. You know, you can read it as just the fun yacht race, which I thought, the Federation has a biannual sailing competition? I did not know this.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in a wide variety of places, including iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. You can download or stream from the website. So go there, grab the shows, and hear what we have to say, not only about the television shows, but even about creative beyond Star Trek. We really try to cover it all here on Trek FM. Kate, let's tell people how to contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on the show. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose Warp 5, and that will come to both Kate and me by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website. There's a tab that lets you do that using your webcam's microphone. And in the forums, you can talk to us and other listeners about Enterprise and the show, and that's at trek.fm/forums. Also, if you enjoy Warp 5, please drop by iTunes and leave us a star rating and a written review. We love to hear from you ourselves, and it also helps other listeners find Warp 5 as they search the iTunes store for Star Trek podcasts and especially for Enterprise material. So we would really appreciate you doing that. And then in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter, where we're always tweeting away about Star Trek all the time, under username TrekFM. Now, Kate, when you're not hiding behind a sand dune with your binoculars trying to spot Trip shirtless as he crosses the desert with Archer, where can people find you?
And sweaty. Don't forget sweaty. Well, as I said, when I'm not behind those sand dunes, you can find me on Twitter at KateIsGreatOK. I've actually just been talking with a new subscriber this week, who's been going back and listening to all of our old episodes, including the interviews that we did early on. So if you are a new listener in particular, send me a tweet and let me know what you think of the show.
Sounds great. And if you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere on social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then on the network, you can find me on a variety of other shows. I do two shows with Matthew Rushing, The Orb, where we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine, very much in the way that Kate and I talk about Enterprise here. Literary Treks with Matthew, where we talk Star Trek books and comics, and we interview authors. You can also find me on The Ready Room every week with hosts from all around the network and special guests as we talk about Star Trek news and all five live-action Star Trek series. And then I also have my own interview show called Matterstream, where I talk to writers and creatives and actors and scientists about topics generally loosely related to Star Trek. And episode that's out this week, I had a great chat with Armin Shimerman last weekend about the new film project that he's working on. And we talked a little bit about Deep Space Nine in there as well. So you can find that on the site as well.
We'd also like to invite you to check out Andrew Allen's album Smooth Iteration. If you like the jazz cover of Where My Heart Will Take Me here on Warp 5, you'll find that plus 9 other jazz renditions of the music from across Star Trek. So you can pick up the album in iTunes or on Amazon. And Chris, I hear that it's the perfect accompaniment to a nice romantic dinner of pan-fried catfish and pecan pie.
It is, it is. Although the bluegrass version is even better for that.
Awesome.
All right. And one more thing before we let everyone go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsor who helps us bring Warp 5 to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. And that's very true for me. I have been an Audible subscriber since 2000, so going on 14 years now. And I really could not live without Audible. And they are the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So support us and go give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com, and we thank Audible for supporting Warp 5 and the network. And lastly, there's one more way you can directly help us keep Warp 5 coming to you each week, and that is by adopting some aliens. Well, they're not the kind of aliens that Trip might stick his hand in a box of pebbles with and, you know, get a wrist nipple or anything like that. They're actually original illustrations by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website, and we have them available as badges and as art prints, and you can mix and match, choose which format you want for each alien, and there are different contribution levels for you to choose from as well. So go find these over at trek.fm/donate, and your support helps us cover the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring Warp 5 to you each week. So we really appreciate you helping us keep the network going at trek.fm/donate.
So thanks everyone for listening. Join us again next week here in the Decon Chamber with Trip for another episode of Warp 5.